Educators want to stay fresh with literacy instruction, but are so busy with students, they don't always have the time. All year long, Choice Literacy publishes and delivers the best K-12 literacy practices so that educators can grow their students as readers and writers with choice in literacy. Welcome to the Big Fresh Choice Literacy Podcast. I'm Ruth Ayers. Celebration is not fluff. By me, Ruth Ayers. When Dana Murphy and David Pittman suggested I start a Choice Literacy podcast, I laughed. "We're serious," David said. "Very serious," Dana agreed. "What would I say?" I asked. I wasn't worried about figuring out the production details. I was concerned about what to say. To put this in writing teacher terms would be to say that I lacked genre sense. Even though I've been a podcast listener for years, I never considered the characteristics of the genre. David and Dana's nudge took root, and I began envisioning and collecting ideas about a Big Fresh Choice Literacy podcast. Then I began planning. Next, I drafted. I slid into my writing process and developed an understanding of the podcast genre as I moved through the process. A few years ago, I wrote a book called Celebrating Writers, From Possibilities Through Publication with Christy Overman. While writing the book, I fought with the idea that celebration is fluff and made a case for writers needing celebration throughout the writing process. Celebration is not fluff for writers. Celebration is fuel for writers. That's why what I realized next should not have been a surprise to me, but it was. As we near 5,000 listens to our brand new Big Fresh Choice Literacy podcast, I realize that I'm not just producing a podcast, but I'm also celebrating. I was surprised to realize that celebration sustained me. As I embarked on creating a new-to-me genre, I found one challenge after another. It would have been easy to give up, just like it's easy for young writers to give up. Instead of giving up, I celebrated. I sent David and Dana silly texts when I overcame a challenge, and they sent me encouraging emojis to keep going. I kept making podcasts because I was having fun. In the midst of a hard school year, I am elated to recognize that celebration continues to be the fuel. Each week, we celebrate the new published features of our contributors. We also celebrate the process of their work with an interview, getting to know behind the scenes of their articles and peeking into their daily lives. They are in the field educators, navigating the same issues and pressures as you, and they are figuring out how to continue to uplift student choice and voice every day in their corners of the world with traditional, virtual, and hybrid instruction. Writing and teaching does not have to be agonizing. It can be full of joy, even during the dark parts of the journey. This week, we celebrate writers, and I hope you will find the fuel you need to keep doing the good work of valuing student choice and voice. For an extra dose of inspiration and connection, check out our podcast. We understand the pressures to reach a variety of learning needs and not enough time to do it. Our content is vetted to hold true to workshop tenets while offering practical ways to plan and deliver literacy instruction. Each week, we publish 4 to 6 new features in our Classy Classroom content. This week, we focus on celebrating writers. In What Are You Celebrating Today?, Melissa Quimby offers a fresh perspective of asking students to define their own celebrations as writers. Rather than always naming the celebration for students, Melissa helps students gain ownership of the writing process by learning to celebrate every stage. Melissa includes inspiring anchor charts and an adapted version of Brian Sepe's writing work plan. In Celebrating with Fan Fiction, Melanie Meehan shares how a short dip into fan fiction can be a wonderful way to inject some play and raise engagement in writing. You'll love the clear strategies Melanie shares for this short and engaging study of fan fiction. In an encore video, Katrina Edwards begins her conference with first grader Alan by celebrating all he is doing well in his writing. She highlights his language and details in writing before moving on to new strategies for him to try. This video was first published in 2018. Bitsy Parks is this month's featured contributor. She is a first grade teacher in Portland, Oregon. This week, she shares a new article titled Writing Joy, a Publishing Celebration. Bitsy joins the podcast to talk more about the writing process, celebrating with first graders, and her course, the gradual release of the primary classroom library, as well as her session in the contributor course, Empower Choice. We hope you enjoyed getting to know Bitsy as our featured contributor. As a thank you to Bitsy for all she shares with us at Choice Literacy, we made a donation in her name to the Cedar Mill Public Library in Portland, Oregon. Today, we're welcoming Bitsy Parks to the Big Fresh podcast. Bitsy, we're glad that you're here. You have been a longtime contributor to Choice Literacy. How did you get started?
Hi, Ruth. Thanks for having me here, first of all. I got started with Choice Literacy actually back when I was in graduate school, and I worked with Ruth Shigori, who was good friends with Brenda Power, and she introduced me to Choice Literacy and introduced me to Brenda Power and got me started writing for her, and it was really, it's just been a really great experience.
And now you're a first grade teacher, or you've been a first grade teacher for a long time near Portland, Oregon.
That's right. I have been teaching for over 20 years, mostly in the primary grades. I started my career in Chicago right out of college and then went to Seattle and taught there and then finally landed here in Portland, Oregon, where I've been teaching for a long time, the last 10 years. 10 plus years have been in first grade.
Well, I'm really excited about the article this week that you've shared in the Big Fresh. It's called Publishing Joy, and it's about publishing with your young writers, one of my very favorite topics, thinking about celebration and publishing. So in the article, you share about the publishing process is part of the celebration in your writing workshop. But before we talk about your first graders publishing their books, I'd like to step back and talk about the writing process for our youngest writers. How do you see the process unfold in your classroom?
You know, we start writing on the very first day of school, and I find that students even 6 years old, already have a process in place, meaning they get to the paper, they produce something, they will go back and fix and change some things at times, and they usually are writing to share it with either their classmates or myself. So I feel like a lot of the process is there, and if we look hard and really pay attention to it in six-year-olds, then we get the opportunity to teach into it and to refine it. So as long as I set up the opportunity for writing right away, I find that it's there.
I agree. I think sometimes we get so caught up in teaching like the writing process that we can forget kids already have a process that they're working through when they create things.
Absolutely. And sometimes we just need to name the process for them as we go. Certainly not right up front, but eventually we can tell them that they're doing things like revising that they didn't even realize they were doing.
It is interesting the way kids are already engaging in parts of the writing process and we can name it for them. I really love the way young writers layer each part of the process right there on top of the paper. So if we don't watch closely, they could have revised by going back and adding to their picture and adding to their words. And we don't even see it because it's just one more layer on top of the work they're creating. You make it so that publishing isn't about making things pretty, but it's about adding meaning. So you talk about teaching children to make choices that lead to greater meaning by considering things like their titles, author pages, covers, and dedication. What's your mindset that allows you not to make publishing about perfection, but about making writerly choices?
Well, I will tell you that the publishing process has been a journey for me. And I will admit there was a time in my teaching career when I did ask students to use the publishing process for fixing, you know, for perfecting, really. And as I watched them copying their writing or redrawing pictures, it just clicked where I thought this is just not a good use of time. There's no thinking work happening here except for neatness. And so thankfully I've got great professional mentors out there. And, I would say Katie Woodray and Matt Glover really guided me in developing my writing workshop and specifically publishing, where I could get to the place to focus on meaning. And that opened me up to realize, what do I want students to feel proud of when they're sharing their work? They already have a story, but how can it become more like our mentor texts? And sometimes they've guided that, you know, they start putting on the copyright in the year, the minute I teach that, and that's not part of the publishing process. That's just something I teach during read aloud. So when we teach our students to be noticers and be able to look at really anything I'm reading aloud throughout the day, and they can bring it back to their writing, they can guide a lot of it. And so I just add on the details of other parts that will make their books meaningful. For instance, the construction paper covers, and then realizing they have a title page is really a magical time of that process for them and for me to watch it happening. Once I made that switch, I have loved the whole process, but really the publishing process too, because it becomes... it's really the moment where they do realize I'm an author. I'm like our mentor text. It's really, really joyful.
It is. And I think magical is the perfect word for that. You use that word in the article too, because it is. Kids get so excited when the books they're making look like the books that are in our classroom library and that we read every day. And it's exciting. And that energy just fuels more writing for kids.
Absolutely. And all kinds of writing. They constantly surprise me with what they start noticing and what they start putting in their writing. It's amazing. They're so amazing.
They are. I was thinking about the way you talked about, you know, your shift where publishing was about fixing up or making things perfect. And so then in the article, you share how when you send writing home, you also send home a parent letter. I think this is really important because it sounds like you're helping parents know what to look for when they see their kids writing. Because sometimes we look at young kids writing and it's not conventional. And so we can easily, or parents can easily, move into this fix up mode. So I was wondering if you'd talk about that letter you send home to parents. What do you include in it? And why do you think that's important?
It's a really good segue, because what you said is exactly what I am trying to do. I'm trying to teach parents kind of what I went through in the process. And it is easy for parents to look at work and become concerned about spelling, concerned about conventions, concerned about neatness. And so in the letter, and we just put it in a little folded construction paper folder, and I just stapled the letter on top. It's super simple. It just says, these are my narrative drafts or my punctuation study drafts. And then I bullet things that we've taught that unit of study, so that parents know I'm not teaching spelling, and I'm not per se in this unit. And this is really what we should be looking for. This is the meaning we should be looking for. So it kind of serves two purposes. It's just communication, and this is what I'm doing. But it's also teaching parents to value what they find inside that folder, instead of looking through it and being concerned that it's messy or concerned that something's not finished. Instead, they know that we've been working on some real meaning in their writing, and they can find that in there almost always. And so it is a process. It's teaching parents how to value their children's approximations, really.
And it's such a gift that you're giving to parents, because I've sometimes the things that we work on in narrative writing in early grades is we might talk about how in the pictures, how the characters feel on the inside, it looks like it on the outside. So if they're happy, there might be a smile. And when you direct parents to that, then they can spot that in their kids' work. And it's just such a uplifting conversation they can have with kids.
Absolutely. And a lot of the units of study and writing I teach are not genre specific. And so they really, it really does guide them into things like you just said, like an illustration study and how characters reflect the feelings. That might be something that I would teach students, and then parents know to look for that. So really it's kind of educating them on how to teach writing also.
It's great when parents are talking the same talk that we're talking at school, because it sticks with kids. And what they begin to understand and realize is how their voice matters and how the stories they tell really communicate to a wide variety of people. You do this in all of your articles, and I think it's been your life work about seeking to uplift student choice and voice. You're currently teaching virtually, and you have been since last March, so nearly a year. What are some of the challenges you've encountered with uplifting student choice and voice, and how have you continued to honor choice and voice?
You know, it's such a good question. It is difficult remotely to do this because for so many reasons. You know, Zoom is an awesome resource, but it's also limiting in many ways, places where I would get a lot of voice when we're making class decisions. They can't contribute to the conversation as easily. Certainly they can unmute, but it just has a different dynamic to it. So it's been challenging. And what I've tried to do through remote teaching is exactly what I do in the classroom, which is giving them choice. We are still doing writing workshop, and they get to write pieces of their choice, reading as much variety of books as they have at home and as much as I'm trying to get them to have at their house, meaning how I'm helping them through the library or through the school, still getting choice in what to read, still getting choice in how they're going to present their work to me. Voice, same. I'm constantly trying to just emulate our classroom. So when things come up, I'm trying to be exactly like I am in the classroom, where I just pose the questions to them. How are we going to handle this? Or what do you think we should do about these type of situations that come up? I try and create a lot of time where they can just be unmuted. So the morning when they enter, that's unmuted and the chat's open and we can just sit and visit. Of course, breakout rooms when there's a lot of time to unmute. And just as much as I can get them still contributing to decisions that we're making and choices and how they're going to take my lesson and put it into practice. I tried the best I can to do that still remotely. Some of the challenges are the materials. You know, we don't have the same materials when it comes to things like math, my nature table. A lot of that has to be done through pictures, which is just one of the drawbacks. But if we can talk about it as a group, I feel like they get an understanding, and they've actually been really good about kind of gathering materials that are similar to mine. And I try and find things that are accessible to everyone to find, even just things from the community, you know, things we find, leaves and things like that, that we can find and use. So it's just a constant practice, but I try to just be myself like I would in the classroom and just make small tweaks wherever I can to address the remote part of learning.
It's such good advice, Bitsy. I bet you can't wait to be back together.
Oh my goodness, I cannot wait. And I feel like we have a ways to go here, but I'm really hopeful and anxious, and of course I want everyone to be safe, so whatever's best, but I am anxious to have them in person.
So you have some courses on the site, and in your session in the elementary contributor course, you share about citizenship choices. Why is it important to frame citizenship as a choice for students?
I really believe that all students can be successful classroom citizens. And I really try and set it up, spending all of September using kind of a three-pronged approach of inquiry with some explicit instruction and then choice, so that students know exactly how to handle or how the options they have for different situations. I feel like when students have choice, they feel safer and they are empowered. And so if I can build into those beginning of the year routines that we need to set up to have our class function in a, you know, efficient but safe and kind and joyful manner, that if we spend the time really looking through books and through situations and doing some classroom activities and getting some where I highlight, you know, students or situations that I notice happening, then students can make the choice when things come up for them, how they want to handle it. It really does bring out the best in them, and they're all capable of it. I really believe that.
I agree. And the way that you outline that in the session, your citizenship choice session, just it makes it accessible. So I do hope people will check that out, because it's wise in really framing choice for kids in a way that matters every day for the way they interact.
I hope so. And, you know, the way in the course, it's just one simple way to start that work with students. But I feel like it naturally then grows into other activities you can do with students, or other read alouds and other character studies that students can learn from. And it's constantly building their repertoire of things they can say and how they can act to be productive citizens in the classroom.
We're all on a journey, that's for sure. We've been talking about the journey of recognizing bias and the way your school is engaged in a commitment to learning more about anti-racist and anti-biased instruction. In fact, you shared an article in the February 5th newsletter about how the things you're learning are impacting some of the choices that you're making in your classroom. And so I was wondering if you would share with us about those changes that you've been making as a result of your professional learning.
Yeah, we have done really great learning, kind of understanding for one thing, but then digging into our own bias so that we can understand it more and make changes. And it's been a great series of professional development for sure. One thing that really struck me, or really has given me a sense of urgency, is to get back into the classroom so that I can take another look at my classroom library and really analyze what's in there, but also what I'm choosing for read alouds. I have always done this work. I've been, you know, reading and trying to follow along with my professional mentors as they've gone through library work. But I think going through this series of PD, it has made it really more personal for me. And I guess really just grown my understanding. So what I've come to realize is that it's not just, you know, having a balanced library or representing all the cultures in my classroom. It's really about helping all of my students build more of a progressive, I would say, or inclusive, implicit bias in themselves. We're going to normalize that the characters all in all of my books are of all different colors, so that it's not just the few select books that get highlighted or that I've just sort of added to the library, that instead it's going to be across the board. And so in that work, I've always kept a list of books to add and have been paying attention to what's published and making sure to get my library more inclusive. But in this case, it's also going to be about weeding out more and really paying attention to the details in the stories that I may not have recognized the first time around. So really starting to weed some things out, which I'm good at for sure, but need to be even better. So really getting a balanced library to build that implicit bias in all of my students.
It's so exciting the way that we can just keep learning and growing. And so, like you were saying, this has been work over the course of a lifetime. And I think it's just work that doesn't end. We're continuing learning and changing and growing.
Absolutely. And it's taken on a new urgency for sure, but it's exciting urgency. And I'm excited to get going on that work.
Bitsy, what's a last bit of advice you have for offering children more choice and voice?
I think that's easy. My advice is trust the children. Understand that they're just young people and don't talk down to them. Have fun and trust them because they will rise to the occasion. They will show you their true selves and they will thrive when we really look at ourselves as partners in the classroom with them.
They really are remarkable. And I think it's why I'm so drawn to your writing is because you are enamored by children and then you show that to us and make it so that we can see the remarkable things kids do in our own classrooms too. It's such a gift that you give to us, Bitsy.
Thank you so much, Ruth. That's so nice. I hope so. It's what I'm always working towards.
Thanks for taking some time to talk with us today.
You bet. Thank you so much for having me.
Our contributors are listening and looking hard for those teachable moments when they can move a child forward as a reader and writer. Each week, we offer free articles to empower all educators to do the same. Join the Choice Literacy Book Club. Christy Rush Levine selected and own voices middle grade fantasy novel, The Barren Grounds, by David A. Robertson for the February read. Be involved by following the hashtag Choice Literacy Book Club. Also, check out the link in the show notes because teachers from across the globe are sharing their thoughts about The Barren Grounds. Join in with the hashtag Choice Literacy Book Club. Do celebrations matter? This is an article I wrote, and if you know me, you know my answer is always a resounding yes. Read the article and find my best tips for sharing writing in a class celebration. In the article, Writing Share Structures, Katrina Edwards moves her first grade class out of a rut with writing shares by introducing several new options. On the author-to-author website, Matt Glover talks with Lester Laminack about the importance of a relationship that allows writers to be vulnerable in the revision process. It's a video that uncovers many ways to celebrate throughout the process. Our Leaders Lounge is dedicated to literacy coaches and school leaders, and you will find 2 to 4 additional new features each week. Jen Schwanke believes in the importance of leaders seeking a coach in order to remain sharp as a professional. She offers 3 identifiers that can help you know it's time to find a coach in her new article, Coaching for All. In this first installment of Virtual Icebreakers, Heather Fisher shares creative ideas for opening meetings in order to maintain strong staff relationships while meeting virtually. Have you checked out Matt Renwick's new course? Matt guides instructional leaders to implement and strengthen instructional literacy walks. Through literacy walks, leaders seek out promising practices, note and name them during formative visits, and lead coaching conversations with teachers. The outcome is not only school improvement, especially in literacy, but also a community of learners who engage in continuous improvement as a natural stance. Check out the course Literacy Walks. Seek, name, and strengthen promising practices. At Choice Literacy, we know that you want to be an educator who makes students' lives better through literacy. In order to do that, you need access to comprehensive literacy practices delivered in a way you will actually use. With over 150 in-the-field contributors, we understand the pressure to reach a variety of needs and not enough time to do it, which is why we hold true to workshop tenets like choice and share practical ways to plan and deliver literacy instruction straight to the point of student need. You can find links to all of the articles discussed in the show notes or sign up for the Big Fresh so you can have the links delivered directly to your inbox. Keep growing readers and writers by offering choice in literacy.